So 2 weeks ago, we did a class on bioethics. We're talking about what kinds of technologies are appropriate for Christians to use and what are not. And the kind of the big picture conclusion we came to, I think anyway, was things that allow us through science to do something that God would have wanted us to be able to do. For example, things that Jesus himself did probably are fine. But things that enhance human abilities or change them in ways that would not have been natural, generally, we're going to not be very hot on. Okay, we're going to talk about Christianity and race, Christianity and politics, war, peace, that kind of thing, gender, homosexuality, LGBT kind of questions, Christianity and culture, modesty, gambling, drinking, things like that. But tonight, we're going to talk about Christianity and reproductive issues in general. This is not a topic that I really would choose to talk about, honestly, because it tends to get me in trouble. No matter what I say, I'm going to be in trouble. But we've decided, and you know, some people have suggested this, and it's true, that the fact that it might get me in trouble is not a good reason to not cover it. So here is one of the conclusions we had at the end of our bioethics lecture, which I think is going to remain appropriate with this topic as well, which is be careful about presupposing the proper Christian view on any topic. Now, some topics are straightforward, and the Christian conclusion is clear. But even on the questions we're going to talk about tonight, there are aspects of it that are not as clear as you think. Okay? So be prepared to do some research. Be careful where you do your research. That applies a bit more to bioethics than the things tonight. You don't really need to do a lot of research about, say, abortion. Okay, be willing to have deep convictions, but also to show grace towards those with whom you do not agree, whether they're believers and even if they're not. Okay, my suggestion. Okay, great. So, difficult question for Christians, part two, reproduction and Christianity. We're going to talk about abortion. We're going to talk about contraception. We're going to talk about in vitro fertilization, surrogacy, and maybe there's other topics in this general area that I didn't think of. And so, I don't know, maybe you'll raise them and we'll talk about them. Okay, got it? Now, in each of these kinds of difficult, hot topics, I'm going to try to address the topics first from one perspective, then from the next perspective, and then from the third perspective. And these are the levels of perspectives. First question I'm going to ask is, what does the Bible say about this? Obviously, as Christians, that's where we always start, I think. I'm pretty sure. I think so. Yeah, okay. I'm getting some yeses on that one. Okay, good. Next question, what can we reasonably infer or conclude based on biblical principles? In other words, there are questions that are literally not addressed in the Bible at all, but some basic common sense applications of biblical principles may lead to a fairly strong conclusion, even though the Bible doesn't say what God's thought on this would be. Okay? And the third is, what are some gray areas? In other words, areas where biblical principles could be used to apply, but where faithful, believing, God-loving Christians would have different opinions. These are the areas in which we're going to have to learn how to have grace and yet have convictions. It's okay to have convictions and grace at the same time. Okay? These questions are particularly relevant to tonight's topic. So we're going to go back. We're going to do it in order. We're going to talk about abortion first, then contraception, then these alternative means of getting pregnant, essentially. Got it? Okay, good. So abortion and Christianity. Here's my background. Point number one. God encourages, and perhaps you could argue even commands, that humans produce children. All right? Genesis 1:28. I'm just establishing biblical principles that are going to, you know, be helpful in deciding how to think about the question of abortion. Genesis 1:28. You guys know this one. Even if you're not even a Christian, you probably know this one. Genesis 1:28. Which says, here you go, God said, he blessed them, he said to them, be fruitful and increase in number and fill the earth and subdue it. There is only one command God has ever given to human beings that they obeyed almost perfectly. We did such a good job of obeying God with this command, right? Got it? But I'm being facetious and funny, but the honest truth is God's intention, just in a broad way of speaking, was that human beings have children. Because these are, I guess, producing people that God can love. And that could love him and that we could love each other. Got it? Psalm 127 verse 4. Again, I'm just establishing principles here. Take notes. Be prepared to ask questions. Be prepared to, I don't know, possibly not even agree with some of the things I say this evening. It's okay, I promise. Psalm 127 verse 4. I thought about this a lot. But I'm producing my conclusions with some, hopefully, humility here. Okay, good. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are children born in one's youth. God created human beings with an innate desire, broadly speaking, to have children. I would argue that's part of us being made in God's image. Okay? Broadly speaking. But on the other side of the same exact question is passages like Matthew 19, 10 through 12. All right? I'm not trying to confuse you. I'm just trying to say there are two things that can be said about this. Okay, the first thing I said is God encourages. Oh, by the way, I also in it says there up there in my notes I wanted to mention is there are a lot of stories in the Bible of women who were barren, yes?
Yeah.
And God miraculously intervenes. God feels deeply, especially for women who cannot give birth. I think in 1 Samuel 1 with Hannah, with Elizabeth, with Sarah, Rebecca, and Rachel. And so God, I might get in trouble for this, but I think God particularly made women want to be give birth. There's some men who want to give birth more than women, and some women who want to give birth less than men. I get it. All right? But I think the Bible story clearly supports generally what I'm saying. Okay, good. Matthew 19, 10 through 12. Now, I'm not trying to disprove what I said in the first statement by the second statement. I'm just trying to present a biblical balance on this question about having children. Matthew 19, 10 through 12. Jesus did say this. He did. It's in the Bible. Verse 10. The disciples said to him, if this is the situation between a husband and wife, that it, you know, about divorce and stuff, it's better to not marry, says some young single guys. Anyway, Jesus replied, not everyone can accept this word, but only those to whom it is given. For there are eunuchs who were born that way, and there are eunuchs who have been made eunuchs by others. Hey, use your imagination what he's talking about here, okay? Got it? And there are those who choose to live like eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. The one who can accept this should accept this. So what's he implying in that third statement about eunuchs?
It's okay to not be married in that group.
Right. In fact, in some cases, that is helpful to the kingdom of God. In other words, there are people who choose to not have children and to not be married for the sake of the kingdom. And Jesus said, we need to honor that decision. Okay? Again, I'm not trying to disprove point A. I'm just saying there's two things that we should maybe bear in mind. Okay, 1 Corinthians 7. I won't read that. But here Paul, it's a rather lengthy discourse on this topic. But Paul in this scripture suggests in that present time, in the middle of the first century, when the church was undergoing great persecutions, he suggests the possibility that it might be better for people to remain unmarried. All right? Nevertheless, having given you part B, I'm going to go back to part A. I believe personally, based on the things that I've read, and we can discuss it, and I think God generally wants his people to probably, most cases, have children. Got it? So my conclusion is this. Marriage and childbearing are honored and even encouraged in Christianity, but they're not commanded. Okay, are we good on that? I think that's pretty straightforward. Good. Now, that's just an introduction. Now I want to talk about abortion. Now, I almost left this screen blank, kind of as a joke. But it's not a funny topic, so I thought maybe I shouldn't do that. So ignore that last line. These are all the scriptures in the Bible that discuss abortion. I was pretty sure. I mean, I've thought about this a lot. I was pretty sure there are no scriptures about abortion in the Bible. And so I did what everybody does nowadays. I checked out ChatGPT and all my sort of bad proof texts that I had in mind, those are the only ones that even ChatGPT had. So this might be an uncomfortable statement, but I'm pretty sure it is true that there are no Bible scriptures that mention abortion either way. Okay? Now, let me show you scriptures that people have said, see, you know, God's saying this is bad and all that sort of stuff. Psalm 51:5. You can decide what you think about this. Psalm 51:5 has been used as a proof text that abortion is sin. By the way, just, you know, I think abortion is not okay. All right, God, I'm not trying to say it's okay. I'm just saying that if it's not okay, it's not because I have a scripture that says it is a sin to have an abortion. I believe it is, but there's just not a verse that says that. You got what I'm saying here? Okay, Psalm 51, verse 5. All right, there we go. Surely I was sinful at birth, sinful from the time my mother conceived me. In other words, basically saying, I was a thinking, conscious being even when I was conceived. Right, but this is just David writing a poem, and he's just blurting out in emotional terms. He's using hyperbole here. All right, so to take this as a doctrinal statement about when humans become human, that's not a good use of scripture. There is one passage that does indirectly mention abortion, kind of. And that's Exodus 21. Okay? The only passage I know of that kind of, in a sense, sort of mentions abortion. That's Exodus 21. You'll see what I mean when we get there. Now, maybe I'm wrong. I've checked carefully, and ChatGPT agrees with me. That doesn't tell you a whole lot, but I'm pretty sure my statement is correct, that there are no passages that say anything about abortion. Okay, Exodus 21, 22 through 25. If people are fighting and hit a pregnant woman and she gives birth prematurely, in other words, I believe, and she has a miscarriage. Okay, got it? But there is no serious injury. The offender must be fined whatever the woman's husband demands and the court allows. But if there's serious injury, presumably to the woman, you are to take life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, and hand for hand, instead of foot for foot. So some people say, see? I mean, somebody has a cause spontaneous abortion, and there's penalty for that. But the penalty is a fine. So for this is a proof text that it's a sin to have an abortion. It just doesn't work. Okay? Now, bear with me. You know, let me talk about this. Because remember, there's three levels. One, two, three. The three levels of questions to ask, right? What does the Bible teach directly? What can we infer reasonably and conclude based on biblical principles? And based on number two, I'm going to conclude without any hesitation whatsoever that Christians should not be aborting babies. Got it? I'm just saying, based on the first question, if I'm honest, I'd say the Bible is not helping us there. Got it? Good. All right. Infer a reasonable conclusion. Now we're on the second level. So I want to talk about the sanctity of life. And most Christians, in fact, virtually every stripe of Christian I know anything about agrees that life is holy. They believe in the sanctity of life, of all human life. Okay? And I believe the sanctity of all human life is a slam dunk in the Bible. Okay? And it's almost like, do we even need to read scriptures on this? But I'm going to read a couple just because it seems like we should, okay? So I'm going to start with Psalm 139. This might be maybe one of the most famous passages on the sanctity of human life. Do you know what that word sanctity means? It means holiness. It means, you know, whatever. Okay, good. Here we go. So this is David speaking to God about himself. He said, "You created me in my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful." Okay, again, what this is a proof text for doctrinally, I don't know. But we see the sanctity of life. Even before we were born, we were knit together by God. Okay, Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 5. And we could go on. Most of the scriptures that relate to this question of the sanctity of life, I find to be in the Old Testament. All right? Jeremiah 1, verse 5, another one, which I believe, you know, talks about the sanctity of life. This is God speaking to Jeremiah. It says, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you as a prophet to the nations." Now, this is poetry. This is God speaking in metaphor. But I believe he's talking about the sanctity of human life. Now, you can use this as a proof text for preexistence of the soul, but we won't get into that. Okay, got it? All right, so my conclusion on this is all human life is sacred. End of story, without apology, no exception. To purposefully and willfully take one of these lives is to violate that basic moral truth. Okay? Now, another note I want to make, because we don't have discussion in the early church about abortion. Neither is it in the New Testament, but as far as I know, there's not significant discussion of it in the early church. But what we do know for a fact is the early church took great emphasis to emphasize the sanctity of all human life. And one thing that was discussed a number of times by the early church fathers is there was a practice in the Greco-Roman world, if you had a child that was somehow deficient, had a deformity, even if you had a child that was of the gender that you don't want to keep, but usually, because it's not that unusual for children to be born with deformities, correct? Yeah. The normal practice was to put that child out somewhere, just leave him there. And the Christians found those children, took them, adopted them and raised them. This was a very, very common practice. So I believe the Christian church demonstrated what I believe is demonstrated in Scripture, which is that all human life is holy, is sanctified, and to take one of those lives or to abandon it, which is the essential equivalent to that, is something that is completely, utterly unacceptable to human beings. Got it? Therefore, I conclude that a Christian would not take the life of an unborn child. And I'm sorry, I'm not going to use the word fetus. I'm not going to use that word. I just did, but that's the last time I'm going to do it. I'm sorry. Okay? If that offends somebody, okay? Now, I'm going to argue that even if you're not a Christian, even if you're an atheist, abortion is clearly and absolutely unacceptable. Why anybody can publicly say, sure, it's okay to have abortions, even if you're an atheist, it doesn't make sense to me. Remember we did a whole class on this, remember in San Diego, Jan? I think it was it Kedron who did it? And he made this argument. This is a brilliant argument. All societies that I know of agree that to take a child who is viable and kill it is wrong and unacceptable.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know of any exceptions to societies that say, you know, let's say a child is about to be born and just sort of knock it off. I mean, we all agree that's, all right? In fact, even when we had Roe versus Wade, I'm not taking a political position there. You can guess what my position is, but I'm not going to say anything. That's not here to do that tonight. Okay? But viability. Statement number two. All right? Statement number one, killing of viable unborn children is wrong, bad, unacceptable, is illegal, and it ought to be. Statement number one. Statement number two, viability is an arbitrary distinction without meaning, morally or ethically. What happens to that unborn child that makes it killable when it becomes viable? There is no possible answer to that. If we're talking about ethics or morality, it doesn't matter. I would argue there is, first of all, the distinction between viable and not viable is a completely arbitrary distinction that even scientists cannot define. Viable 30 years ago and viable now is very different. Right? Ask the Brummets. They'll tell you. So I believe this viability argument for why it's okay to kill unborn children earlier is a completely arbitrary and meaningless distinction. Even if you're an atheist or anything else. Okay? Therefore, point three in my argument, therefore it is unethical for sure and immoral from a Christian perspective to take the life of any unborn child. And how people can defend this, because we all agree, let's say the child gets born, and you say, man, I just don't want it. Just kill it.
No.
Right? Thank you. And they say, well, the child's about to be born, so I better kill it before it comes out, because, you know, after that, I can't. We all go, God forbid. So when does that change? When, between the moment the child's implanted in the mother, and when does this, so I would argue that abortion is unethical, well, even if you don't believe in morality, like you're an atheist. I say it's unethical. Period. Okay? By the way, I'm avoiding using a very provocative word that was used in a setting. Some of you know what I'm talking about. I'm purposely avoiding using that word. Okay? That's on purpose, just so you know. All right. Now, but is it that simple? I was at a lecture at UCSD several years ago, and it was by a woman who was a scientist. She was a bioethicist. She was not a believer, as far as I know. As far as I know, she wasn't a believer. And she gave a lecture on this topic, in which she essentially said what I just said.
Wow.
At UCSD in front of hundreds of students. I was so impressed. But then she raised a question. I want to raise it. This is going to create more problems it's going to solve, but I'm going to raise it anyway because that's what she did, and I'm just going to put it out there for you to think about. She argued that the point of life is when the embryo is implanted in the mother. That's what she argued. The thing that even all human beings can agree, from that point on, it's life, it's human. So she argued the unarguable point where the distinction would be made that this is a life that we're taking, this is a sanctified, you know, life, would be when the embryo is implanted in the mother's womb. Now, I'm going to come back to that because I'm going to talk about birth control. And I'm going to ask you to at least think about this position. Because there's some things that some Christians say is fine, and other Christians say that it's not. And whether it is or is not, can be partially based on what you think, because fertilized embryos, you know, in fact, when we get to my IUDs, I'll get to that. So I'm kind of getting into some sensitive topics. I'll just say this. All right. When does human life begin? Is it when the sperm meets the egg, or when the embryo is implanted in the womb and therefore has found a home where it could at least conceivably be alive? The Bible doesn't help with that question for the simple reason is they didn't even know what an embryo was. And they didn't even know what an egg or a sperm was. I would say probably maybe a majority of Christians would go with this. But I know a lot of Christians would go with this. This is an argument that cannot be settled by the Bible. And so this is one of those areas that I want to suggest you want to have your conviction and have it as strong as you choose. But be prepared for faithful, God-fearing disciples that have a different opinion about that. And understand you cannot settle that question. You might think you could, but I say you can't. Okay? So, even right now, tell yourself, what do you think? Okay, I'm not going to have you raise a hand. All right, my conclusion so far, that from the moment an embryo finds itself implanted in mother's womb, it is immoral as well as unethical to take the life of that child. I say that without any sense that I need to qualify that or explain it. So I was having a discussion with Emma earlier. She said, isn't this an easy question? And I say, to reach that conclusion, yeah, that's actually, I think that's pretty straightforward. Okay? But there's more things to talk about. There's more things to talk about. Now, by the way, the answer is going to be no, no. My answer to all these is going to be no, 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 no. All right? But we have friends who theoretically agree with this, who say these things as if this works, you know? Well, but what about a pregnant teenager? Does that change this first statement? No. What about if I can't afford to raise the child? No. What if it'll destroy my education and my opportunities for advancement? Tough one. What if it was forced on me? That's a real question. That's a real question. Okay? Think about that. I, as a Christian, I stay in this place. Okay? Now, am I going to judge a woman who was raped? I'm not going to do that. I'm not. But I'm not going to change my opinion. Okay? I'd say the emphasis on compassion versus judgment on that is so huge. Right? It's so huge. You know what I'm saying? I'm purposely not saying some things here. I'm purposely being careful. But my perspective, I stay here. All right? But in such cases, I believe conviction is very important, but so is compassion, not judgment, on those who've made a decision that we're just not going to be able to support. All right, this is a question that was raised. Somebody in this room asked me this question. This is a really good question. What if you have a good friend who's not a Christian, who's pregnant, and tells you that they've decided to get an abortion? What should you as a Christian do about that? Okay. Do we have an obligation to say that Do we disagree with that? I think the answer is yes, we do. I think so. I think we have an obligation as a Christian to say that we believe that is wrong. I mean, by the way, we're going to have this is going to be one of those lively discussion nights, okay? This is my conviction that we have a duty as a friend to express our belief that that is wrong. But does that mean that we should refuse to support them? To say, there's no way I'm going to drive you to that clinic. There's no way I will ever be your friend again. To basically say, get out of my life, Let me give an example that's, I think, a little bit related. Is Jan and I have had a number of friends who were couples, Christian families, who had a child who was homosexual. And that child got married to a same-sex person. And the question is, should I, as a parent of such a child, say that person can never enter my home? That person cannot, I refuse to go to the wedding. These are not easy questions. And I think it's easy. Remember I talked about 2 weeks ago about having a knee-jerk response? There's a knee-jerk response. It's so easy to say, no, I can't, you should never go to that wedding and blah, blah, blah. It's so easy to say that. But my answer is, I don't know. I don't know for sure. I don't know for sure. But again, my answer to question number one is that we need to say without apologizing, I believe that is wrong. But I wouldn't say automatically, absolutely, we would not in any way support them, not by saying it's okay. For discussion, okay? What about people who we meet who are interested in Christianity who already had an abortion? What about that? Okay, here's my proposal. First of all, they need to understand that although when they did it, they may have had no concept of the moral implications, nevertheless, just because you don't know something is sinful doesn't mean it's not a sin. So I think this needs to be addressed when we study with people as a sin. However, my thinking on this is our principal tone should be compassion, comfort, and forgiveness. But then understand that they will and can be forgiven. Because anybody I know, and you ladies know more about this than I do, any woman I know who's had an abortion has an intense feeling, even if, they found a reason to say it's okay, they feel a lot of guilt, a lot of stuff. So I believe that person that we meet, even a guy who's responsible, it's a little bit different, it's not nearly as emotional, whether it's a male or a female whose decision led to a child being killed, all right, I believe, although we should make it this was wrong, it was sin, it was immoral, I believe our principal tone should be to offer emotional support and make them understand they can be forgiven. That's what I believe. I'm open to having somebody say, John, that's not really where you should be going on that one. I believe a lot of Christians really do very, very bad in this area. All right? I think a lot of Christians have so much time condemning that these people may just never make it to heaven because we're so busy doing the first thing, which I believe we need to do. But I think we should fairly strongly lean in this direction. Okay? Again, we can discuss that. Alright. So offer compassion and forgiveness. Okay? All right, so my statement here, if a man but a special woman comes to us as has aborted their unborn child, we should make them both aware that it was a sin, but we should principally offer forgiveness, comfort, and perhaps even counseling if that's needed. We should not be putting scarlet letters on people, if you know the book, Scarlet, The Scarlet Letter. Next question. All right, what should we do about it? Oh, that's I skipped one. What should we do about this issue? Should we be activists on this issue? There's a lot of issues. There's environmentalism, there's social justice, there's immigration, there's poverty, there's all kinds of issues. So should I, as a believer, be doing demonstrations about abortion? Should I be picketing abortion clinics? Should I take direct action? I'd suggest a lot better, maybe to help people to possibly have adoption. My answer is your choice. I'm going to the next slide. I'm not going to say anything about that. I'm just raising the questions. Okay. This would not be my thing, personally. This person sitting right here. Okay. But if that's your thing, I see the irony. That's your choice. That there's an irony there. Never mind. It's a little, okay. Whoops. Humor on this topic should be avoided. Probably. Okay. Last question. This is a hard one. This is a real one, though. And the courts consider this one. What should you do in the rare situation, but not super rare? It's rare, but it's not fantastically rare. Where there's a possibility that in keeping the child, the mother would die. Okay? I would guess possibly there's nobody in this room who's ever been in that situation, even with somebody they know. Right? But if we had 100 people in the room, there'd probably be at least one person in there who's actually been around this kind of situation. It's quite unusual, and probably in your entire life you're never going to have to deal with this question. But possibly you will. Okay, now this is a very complicated question. It's a very difficult question. In most cases, it's the choice either between the mother dying between the child dying or the mother and the child dying. Most cases like this, where the life of the mother is in danger. Generally, when the life of the mother is in danger, that child will not be viable in any case. So what does that mean? Okay. All right. Ethicists and many Christians believe the choice is clear. The priority should be with the mother. Okay? There are a number of situations where medical procedures can be done that would increase the likelihood the mother would not die, but also increase the likelihood that the child would. That's a real thing. Okay? And as far as I know, both ethicists and Christians who've thought about this carefully all agree that the mother should take priority in these situations. Even though all human life has dignity and all human life is holy. Okay? Great. Done with that. Now, the next two topics, they're easy. And they're fun, actually. I don't know about fun, but they're kind of easy. What about Christianity and contraception? Okay? By the way, there's a proof text that contraception is a sin. This is a joke, though, honestly. Although, in fact, this one came up today. Somebody at the table.
Really?
Yes. Wow. Yes. Genesis 38, 8 through 10. All right, let's go there. Genesis 38, 8 through 10. Is it okay for Christians to do contraception? Most of you don't have to worry about that right now, but probably most people in this room are going to have to think about that at some point. All right? Okay, there you go. So this is methods can be used to prevent getting pregnant. Okay? I'm even going to list them. And when I seriously list, you go, I guess I did know about that. Okay, good. I'm glad to have somebody who's fairly innocent on this topic. That's so encouraging, I'll tell you right now. Then Judah said to Onan, sleep with your brother's wife and fulfill your duty to her as a brother-in-law to raise up offspring for your brother. But Onan knew that the child would not be his, so whenever he slept with his brother's wife, he spilled his semen on the ground to keep from providing offspring for his brother. He was doing contraception. By the way, I'm getting into stuff we don't normally talk in mixed company with unmarried people, but that is a form of contraception. It is. Okay. It's not the most high-tech one. So Onan is condemned for this horrible act of contraception. All right. This is a terrible proof text for contraception being a sin. Onan's sin was gratifying himself sexually and abusing this woman, because in the Jewish system, if a woman is married to a man and the man dies, that woman, her line does not continue. All right? So God, this is called levirate marriage. There's even a term for that. So the brothers were required to take her as a wife so she could produce children and have descendants. So this guy wanted to have the sex, but not the child. The most selfish, horrible, disgusting, abusive thing ever. This does not prove that contraception is a sin. Now, is contraception a sin? All right? I don't know. I don't know. I wish the Bible gave clear answers to every possible question. But I'm going to tell you, I bet every married person in this room used it. I bet. I don't know. So, the bottom line is the Bible does not address this subject. And remember, almost the very first slide I had, okay? All right, almost the very first slide I had, God encourages, perhaps even commands that humans produce children, God helps barren women, but God allows and in some cases encourages some to not marry and therefore to not have children. So it is not immoral or wrong or sinful to not have children. All right, it's also not immoral or sinful to have sex for the sake of pleasure. God's all over that one. Read Song of Solomon, Song of Songs. If you don't believe that, maybe don't read that one, but just kidding. You go ahead and read that. It's in the Bible, all right? So the idea that somehow sex is merely for procreation, that's garbage. That is not Bible at all. Now, that's been taught. Oh, that's been taught. Oh, but that is not true. All right, so some people say, so if you're having contraception, that means you're having sex so you can have fun with your wife rather than have children. Okay, how about women that can't produce children anymore? So you stop having sex because you can't produce women children anymore? Come on, guys. So I'm going to some topics we don't normally talk about. That's one of the reasons I didn't want to talk about this. But I'm talking about it right now, okay? You guys are old enough. You know exactly what I'm talking about. All right? All right. Get it? All right. So let me go back to the slide. So, conclusion. Christians will have different opinions on this. Okay, just so you know. There's a really, really famous church, the biggest single church in the world, that tells you it's a sin, and yet most of the members of that church ignore that one. Okay? All right. So be aware that faithful, God-loving believers will differ on this one, just so you know. I can't tell you what God thinks about this. It would be presumptuous for me to tell you that. Okay? I have an opinion, but I'm not going to tell you. You can guess from something I said earlier, but that's beside the point. So I've had people tell me, and I believed them at the time, that certain kinds of contraception that are available for use commonly in America are sinful while others are not. Okay? Yeah, that okay, but I've had, you know, Christians that are fairly knowledgeable and even done some research and told me that. But what I've decided, you do your own research too. But as far as I know, every form of contraception available today either causes ovulation to not occur or causes fertilization to not occur. It does not kill an embryo. Okay? So if any form of contraception is not wrong, then none is wrong either. What I mean by that is the pill prevents ovulation, the IUD, intrauterine device, prevents ovulation. That's the one I was told is wrong because it kills the embryo. In fact, I did a little thing, and the percentage of embryos that don't make it is equal. You know, it has no effect on that. Okay? So, all of these. And the morning after pill, which is should not be used, except as emergency contraception. So, therefore, I don't think a Christian would ever use that unless they were raped or very, very foolishly, you know, had sex with somebody they're not married to. Does that ever happen? Yeah. All right. And go see Sandy and, you know, I'm sort of joking, but I'm not, because that's where you go. You go to your pharmacist. All right, so what I'm saying is, all right, no, I'm making light of a thing, which Sandy works in a pharmacy, okay? So what I'm saying is, if any of these are moral, oops. Okay. I don't know what happened. I don't know how I did that. Okay. What I'm saying is, if any form of contraception, even the rhythm method, and even the what Onan did, is moral and ethical and acceptable, then as far as I know, all of them are. Okay? So saying, all right, got that? I'm not telling you whether it's okay or wrong or good or bad or anything. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that there's no distinction that I can detect between one or the other. Yes? All right, the rhythm method is, see, women are actually fertile for about, what, 4, 5, 6 days out of the month? So the preferred contraception method amongst Catholics is the rhythm method. So you just don't have sex during those 5 or 6 days. The problem is, when you have sex, the sperm can stay alive for a few days, so it's not very effective. It's 22. They said it's 22% effective. All right. Condoms are roughly 13% effective. The pill is roughly 2%. I'm sorry, all but 2%. Right. So, in other words, the failure rate of the rhythm method is 22%. The failure rate of condoms is 13%. The failure rate of the pill is 2%. The failure rate of the IUD is 0.1%, and I don't know about the morning after pill. Okay? Wow, we're getting an education here. Okay. Okay. Now, the abortion pill is not the same as the morning after pill. The abortion pill is killing an unborn child. Okay? The abortion pill is killing an unborn child. Nothing more need be said. Last topic, in vitro and surrogacy. I know I've over time, but I can do this in 3 minutes. IVF. At one time, like 30, 40, 50 years ago, almost all Christians thought in vitro fertilization is this horrible anti-God, you know, playing God thing. In vitro, by the way, literally means in glass. In other words, you take sperm from a guy, egg from a woman, put them together. Not literally in glass, I don't know what it is. And fertilization happens, you take the fertilized embryos and put it in the woman. Test tube baby, right. It was a majority position generally across most Christian groups 50 years ago. This is something that Christians should never be doing. And it's the majority position now That what? How awesome is that? You know, because remember, like I said, God really cares about women who cannot give birth. He does miraculous things in some cases that they might. So I have a hard time thinking of IVF as simple. All right? Is it intervening in the natural process? Yeah. So is taking antibiotics, and so is setting a broken leg. Now, just because I said that doesn't mean you need to agree with me. However, there is one moral ethical problem, is that the most common IVF method involves making multiple embryos, implanting two or three, and essentially killing the other ones. Okay? What some people do is they put them under liquid nitrogen. So, okay, so we'll kill them 50 years from now. You know, if you don't implant it. So some people, and I've had Christians that have looked me in the face and said, that's the most sinful, worldly, how could any Christian ever do that? Because it involves killing human embryos. Remember that slide that I said, when life begins is something that is, you know, once the embryo has been implanted in the mother, I know of no possible thing. But between fertilization and implantation, Christians possibly may not have all the same opinion about that. Got that? Solution. If you're going to have in vitro fertilization, although it's more expensive and also less likely to work, have the person doing that implant all the viable embryos. Okay? If that's a problem for you. So in vitro fertilization, in which the parents, potential parents, choose to implant all fertile embryos, I believe that erases that moral issue. Okay? But I believe there's ethical issues with IVF because it's very, very, very expensive. And the other way of having children is cost you nothing, alright, and this, you know, spending money that could be spent to serve the poor. I mean, I think there's ethical concerns, even for non-Christians, honestly, with IVF. You know, the amount of money being spent on that. But anyway, good. What about, alright, so is IVF okay for Christians? Debatable, I guess. The issue of multiple embryos, some of which are destroyed, alternative implantation of all embryos. Conclusion, faithful, God-fearing disciples will disagree on this. What about surrogacy? All right. Yeah, I'm going to give you the ChatGPT answer. I looked it up. I couldn't improve on this one. I'm just going to read it. This is so funny. Surrogacy is not explicitly forgiven in the... You know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah, okay. It's not explicitly forgiven in the Bible. Christian views are deeply divided on surrogacy, ranging from viewing it as a loving act of compassion to a violation of the sanctity of marriage and human dignity. While some, particularly in certain Protestant denominations, may accept it, the Roman Catholic Church, not surprisingly, condemns it. Here are our questions for our group discussions. What do you feel about the Christian idea of the sanctity of life? Is this a clear and absolute Christian moral position? This might be a really quick discussion, but I think maybe we should discuss it. Question number two. What question that was raised by this class tonight would you like to discuss in your group? It's an open-ended question. Question number three. It was claimed in this class tonight that there's no Bible verse on abortion specifically. All right? Do you agree that this is true? Because you might disagree. And feel free to disagree with me on that, okay? Please. Feel free to disagree with me on that. All right? But if you do agree with that, does that bother you? Does that bother you? That's such an important issue. Assuming you accept my premise, does that bother you? So this will be a fun discussion. Let's end with a prayer. Father, I'm thankful that you've provided us with your Bible that answers so many questions. God, I pray for those questions which are not answered for us directly. You give us moral wisdom. And in all things, God, let us have mercy and compassion. not compromising our convictions about what's wrong and right, really, ever. But knowing how to have compassion, love, and to show Christian forgiveness in situations where that's what the person needs. Thank you. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay. So, you can see why I didn't want to teach that class. But yeah, I got it done. Thank you. Okay. As usual, let's try to divide up the older and younger to have some, there's some nice distribution there. Have at least one older person in each group, please. Jen, you're old, really? Are you sure? Okay. We got a bunch of old people here in the middle. All right. Okay, yeah, we can be over here. Michael and I, you can come over here. We got a 3-2 old to young ratio over here. I'm gonna try to be just completely quiet. I'm gonna try to say literally nothing. I'm in this group, but I'm gonna try my best to say nothing.
Yeah, me too.
No, you can. I just finished talking for an hour on this.
That you did.
You do that every night.
I know, but.
No,